This is James R. Copeland, the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. And it's my pleasure to welcome here my friend and our pointoflaw.com contributor, Hester Pierce, who's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason, as well as an old law school buddy. So Hester, welcome to the Manhattan Institute podcast. We're here to talk today about your new book, co-authored with James Brule, which is entitled Dodd-Frank: What It Does and Why It's Flawed. So what it's pretty self-evident what this book's about, Hester. It's about the Dodd-Frank law, but in a nutshell, what are the principal problems with this legislation as you see it?
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for the chance to talk to you today. We wrote this book because we were concerned that the rhetoric around Dodd-Frank had really obscured some of the realities of the book, of the statute. And so the book attempts to identify some of the main problems. First, Dodd-Frank didn't solve the problems that led to the crisis. But the primary example of this is the GSEs, Fannie and Freddie, weren't even dealt with in the legislation at all. Second, it exacerbated existing problems, such as the too-big-to-fail problem, and it created a whole new set of too-big-to-fail entities. And then third, it created a new set of problems, and that would include creating derivatives clearinghouses or forcing them to be expanded so that they're likely to be the cause of a future crisis.
It really is staggering to those of us who don't follow this as closely as you do to think about the fact that this mammoth piece of legislation, as big a piece of legislation as it was, doesn't even deal with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And the basic fundamentals of housing funding and how they were done in this country. So that's really remarkable. In terms of the derivatives clearinghouse, well, why is that a bad idea? Because a number of folks were floating this as sort of, you know, part of the problem was AIG was effectively acting as a de facto clearinghouse and it was insolvent, et cetera. What's the big problem as you see it with the derivatives clearinghouse reform?
Well, as an initial matter, I think that derivatives were not as central a part of the crisis as folks like to think. AIG did have a derivatives problem, and it was a big derivatives problem, but about half of their problems stemmed from securities lending, an issue that wasn't dealt with in Dodd-Frank at all. But putting that aside, clearing derivatives in itself is not a bad idea, and the industry was already moving towards central clearing of more derivatives. But forcing clearing of derivatives is a bad idea because it will force into clearinghouses products that aren't really ready to be cleared and the risks of which are not readily understood and the correlations of which are not understood. And so the likely result of that is that we're going to see a clearinghouse with a problem. And because all entities are forced to deal with a clearinghouse, when that problem happens, it's going to reverberate throughout the economy.
Well, that's a sobering note. You basically make the same argument, I suppose, when it comes to the too big to fail reforms. I mean, when you hear the political actors, at least those who supported this legislation, speak about it, they act as if they're getting rid of this too big to fail problem that my colleague Nicole Gelinas has fingered as a major culprit in the financial collapse. But you're actually arguing, I think, that this makes the problem worse. How is that?
I think it does make the problem worse, and I agree with Nicole that it is a problem. Dodd-Frank tried to solve the problem by identifying a whole set of too-big-to-fail entities, which includes banks and non-banks. And those entities will be regulated by the Federal Reserve with special regulations, tough regulations. And so proponents of Dodd-Frank say, well, that's the solution. We're going to regulate these entities so well that they won't fail. But at the same time, by singling out entities to go into this category, you've told the world, these are the entities that we don't ever want to let fail. And so those entities are going to be able to fund themselves cheaper than other entities. It'll give them a competitive advantage. And if there is a problem, you can be sure that the regulators will do whatever they need to do to prevent a failure from happening, or at least from becoming known publicly. The extraordinary steps that the regulators took to save some of the largest entities during the last crisis, I think, are foreshadowing of what we'll see when one of these too big to fail entities has problems in the future.
So you're basically placing all your trust in the body of regulations that these folks come up with to prevent the failure of these too big to fail entities, which are now codified into law. Well, what about those regulatory structures? Because a number of the critics of Dodd-Frank have pointed to this sort of unaccountable boards. I mean, now we've got Richard Cordray running this Financial Protection Bureau, which I guess is quite different than the systemic risk regulation, because it seems to be an entirely different matter when you're talking about credit cards and ordinary customers. But you've got this sort of broad regulatory apparatus, which seems unaccountable relative to other types of federal agencies. Am I reading that wrong? And what's really the problem as you see it with the regulatory structure here?
Well, I think you raised a couple of problems with the CFPB, both of which are relevant. One, it is not a systemic regulator, and oddly, it's completely cut off from any consideration of safety and soundness of the entities that it regulates. So it's marching merrily along, not even considering safety and soundness, and that's a problem. But the other problem is the one that you mentioned about independence or autonomy. The CFPB can do whatever it likes. It is not accountable to anyone. It's theoretically placed within the Fed, but it doesn't have any responsibility to report to the Fed or be accountable to the Fed. And it's not accountable to Congress. It sets its own budget, and it's displayed an attitude of doing whatever it chooses to do without much concern for what anyone else says. And so it will be a big presence in the economy, and I think a big weight on the economy.
So if the CFPB is a problem and it's not really overseeing systemic risks, I mean, who gets the new authority on overseeing such things? Is it the SEC, the Fed, and how does this interact, and how may it work or fail to work in your view?
Well, so there's a new Financial Stability Oversight Council, which is the Uber regulator charged with watching out for systemic risk. Incidentally, no one really knows what systemic risk is, so that's a tough job to have.
Right.
And then the Fed has gotten incredible new powers to oversee all kinds of financial institutions, and so they, too, are playing an active role in regulating systemic risk, again, admitting that they don't know what it is.
Interesting. So if you had your druthers, we were able to throw out Dodd-Frank and start from scratch, what two or three features in the Dodd-Frank legislation might you keep, and what things that are missing would you add to the body of regulation?
Asking me what I would keep is hard, because there's very little of Dodd-Frank that I actually think is on target. But I think that some of the credit rating agency reforms were good in trying to remove the ratings from statutes and regulations so that folks aren't forced to rely on the credit rating agencies. I think that's a good step.
Right.
And I think that some new capital requirements are good, although Dodd-Frank doesn't directly impose new capital requirements, but it directs the Fed to do that. I think higher capital requirements on banks would go a long way towards helping them to be safer. And then as far as other elements that I would add in, I think dealing with housing finance is very important. Getting the government out of that area is really important. And then I think we need to look at ways to make shareholders and creditors more responsible for the losses of the entities where they're placing their money. And there are a lot of different ways to do that. One of them is to look at options like contingent capital, so that debt will actually convert over into equity when things get get rough, and that will force creditors to watch a little more closely what their institutions are doing. Mm. You could also impose double liability on shareholders of financial institutions to make them put more money in when things get bad. And again, those kind of mechanisms would force folks other than regulators to be watching what financial institutions are doing and to be placing constraints on them.
Hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. All right, Hester. Well, it's been my pleasure to have you here with us. I'm just scratching the surface on understanding Dodd-Frank, and I've been looking at it a lot. You've been looking at it a lot more carefully than I have. I would encourage everyone to go to the Mercatus Center website or look otherwise for your new book with James Brewer, Dodd-Frank, What It Does and Why It's Flawed. And we may come back and talk about this more, because a lot of this, as I understand it, continues to be up in flux as regulations are still being written. And so some of the things we think today could change in the next year or two.
That's absolutely right. Thanks, Jim, so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you again. Again, this has been James R. Copeland, the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, with Hester Pierce, a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University.